Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for the Health Report and Explorations, coming up after As It Is.
Hello, and welcome to As It Is from VOA Learning English. I'm Mario Ritter in Washington. Today, we hear about serious issues of children's rights in Africa. The conflict between religious militias in the Central African Republic has forced many children into fighting as soldiers. Later in the program, we hear some of their stories. But first, we learn about efforts in Mozambique to stop an illegal traditional practice, child marriage. The African Union has sworn to stop all child marriages within a generation. Yet the African nation of Mozambique has one of the highest rates of child marriage in the world. Strong social and cultural traditions support the practice, although it is illegal. Early marriage compromises the right of girls to an education. It can also have a shocking effect on their health. Reporter Gillian Parker traveled to Mozambique with the International Reporting Project. Katie Weaver has her story.
Near the town of Pemba in northern Mozambique, 16-year-old Rachel plays with her daughter. Rachel is not the girl's real name. The young mother did not want to be identified. She also asked not to be recorded. Rachel got pregnant when she was 14 years old. She told VOA, "My big sister warned me to stay in school. There are many here who have babies at a young age, but normally they leave school to get married and continue to have children every year after that. Some think marriage is a guarantee of security." Rachel's story is not unusual in Mozambique, where 52% of girls marry before they are 18. Ceremonies with dancing and music mark the beginning of the mostly secretive initiation rites season in Pemba. Girls are removed from school when they have their first menstruation, the bleeding that is part of a woman's monthly period. The girls spend days, weeks, or even months being taught traditions by the matronas, female community leaders. The local school calendar is organized in a way to support the custom. The matronas teach the traditions to prepare girls for married life in Mozambique. They train them to be obedient to men. They teach them about cooking and other duties related to home and family. The matronas also train the girls in how to interest a man sexually. The initiation rites may also include removing part of the girl's genital organs. This is done in the belief that it will increase male sexual pleasure. Girls are considered ready for marriage once they have completed the initiation activities. Girls Not Brides is an organization working to end child marriage. Françoise Maduthe is the group's Africa regional officer. She says child marriage often forces girls to leave school. She says the girls also often have babies before their bodies have grown enough to support healthy reproduction.
Most often expected to enter into sexual intercourse very early before her body is ready.
Naredzaya Gomozavanda is the African Union Goodwill Ambassador for Ending Child Marriage. She says child marriage is a violation of the fundamental rights of girls. She believes that child marriage can be ended within a generation if governments, women, and youth movements work together with religious and traditional leaders.
Getting into a marriage should not be an option out of poverty.
Slowly, attitudes are changing in Pemba. Education has improved, and increased media availability is expanding the flow of information. Child-to-child radio programs debate issues affecting young people. The programs give young people greater influence in the community. National health campaigns are helping parents learn about the possible harms of early marriage. Rachel's parents are delaying her completion of the initiation activities so that she can stay in school. I'm Katie Weaver.
Next, we hear about the crisis of child soldiers in the Central African Republic. Kelly Jean Kelly brings us the story.
A boy named Jerome said he joined a militia when an opposing group attacked his village. Some people were burned in their homes. Others were shot when they sought to run away.
I'll never forget that day, he says. The Seleka killed my uncle. That pushed me to join the Anti-Balaka militia.
The Anti-Balaka is a coalition of armed groups opposed to the Seleka rebels. Another boy, Serge, joined the Anti-Balaka just before it attacked the capital in December 2013.
He says, I was a good fighter, fearless. The commander liked me.
Serge says he is 17 years old, but he has a boy's face and a thin body. He looks much younger. Most children in the armed groups are teenagers. Some are younger than 10. Serge says children's ages and sizes help to determine their positions in the armed groups. Strong boys, such as Serge, might become fighters. Younger children clean up. Judith Levaye is a deputy representative of UNICEF, the United Nations Children's Fund. She said, the number of children who are part of armed groups has risen over the past few months. She says that up to 10,000 children have ties to the armed groups. Some have been part of the militias for 2 years.
In some cases, they've gone so far in the level of atrocities that it's very difficult for them to return to where they're from. And if we don't accelerate and respond to the needs, there's a risk that there's going to be a lost generation in this country.
UNICEF has negotiated with the groups to release about 1,400 of the children, including Jerome and Serge. One-fifth of the children being released are girls. Ms. Levaye says they were used as cooks, cleaners, or were given to commanders to marry.
They do all the chores, the camp chores, but they also act as sex slaves. Or they get under the protection of one of the commanders. And then sometimes they get pregnant. Some are really, really young, like 10, 12, 14 years old.
Ms. Levaye says the children need a chance to rejoin their families. But for some, like Jerome, returning to his mother and father is not possible. If the battle continues, he said, and the rebel group needs him, he will join the anti-Balaka again. I'm Kelly Jean Kelly.
And that's our program for today. Listen again tomorrow for another As It Is program from VOA Learning English.
The Health Report is next, followed by Explorations. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
From VOA Learning English, this is the Health Report. November is Alzheimer's Awareness Month in the United States. Alzheimer's is a frightening disease. It is frightening not only for those who suffer from memory loss, but also for their loved ones. But researchers in California say a new way of treating Alzheimer's disease is showing promise for reversing some of that memory loss. The new treatment combines Western medicine with Eastern philosophy, ideas rooted in Asian religions. Dr. Dale Bredesen is with the Easton Center for Alzheimer's Disease Research at UCLA. He says 9 of 10 patients suffering from either Alzheimer's or other disorders of the brain noted improvements in their memory. He says the new therapy treats the whole patient, not just parts of the patient. This is called holistic care. Dr. Bredesen says the traditional use of only one treatment, what he calls monotherapy, just did not work with many patients. Dr. Bredesen says there is a constant balance of the brain remembering and forgetting. He says many things, including a person's lifestyle, can create an imbalance in brain activity. And this imbalance can lead to memory loss. The 36 different parts or elements include a person's diet, exercise, and sleep. Dr. Bredesen creates an individualized treatment for each patient. He does this by taking images of their brain, testing their blood, and asking many questions about their daily life. Treatments include lifestyle changes and even medicines or vitamin supplements. He describes this new therapy as combining Western understanding of the human body with the Eastern method of looking at the whole patient. As for lifestyle changes, subjects were told to avoid carbohydrates like bread and pasta. They also avoided processed foods and gluten, a protein found in wheat. Researchers told subjects to eat more fish and to take vitamin B12, D3, and fish oil. They also practiced yoga, sat quietly for 20 minutes, 2 times each day, and they slept more.
What we're using is a combination that brings these two together to create a new kind of physician that is doing a different kind of medicine, who understands the basics of molecular genetics, but also understands the need to bring things together in a network fashion.
Dr. Bredesen says for the 9 patients whose memory improved, it usually happened within 3 to 6 months. The researchers say they followed some patients up to 2.5 years, and the memory improvements remained. I'm Anna Mateo.
I'm Barbara Klein.
And I'm Steve Ember with Explorations in VOA Special English. A blue hole is a flooded sea cave with a hole that opens up at the land's surface. These cave systems form in carbonate rock, often on islands. Some blue holes have very special rock formations and water chemistry. Far below sea level, they contain some of the harshest environments on Earth, with no oxygen and no light. Yet these areas are filled with life forms that have adapted to the extreme conditions. Information gathered from these blue holes is helping scientists to increase their understanding of biology, archaeology, and geology. But exploring these blue hole environments brings danger as well as discovery.
Blue holes get their name from the color some have when seen from the air. The color is usually a reflection of the sky on the water. But not all of these cave systems have blue surfaces. Some contain dark or muddy water. Blue holes are the result of erosion, in which water breaks down rock. Rain falling thousands of years ago contained chemicals which slowly wore away at the limestone landmass. These holes later filled with seawater as the sea level changed. The rising and falling of sea levels and the mixture of salt and fresh water further wore away at these cave formations. Blue holes are vertical caves, but they can also have horizontal cave formations that may be hundreds of meters long.
These flooded cave systems can be found in the ocean, or they can be found inland. Ocean caves are affected by tides, so they always have water movement. But blue holes on land are very still. They have several layers of water, chemicals, and bacteria. The top layer of fresh water comes from rainfall. This layer acts like a cap on top of the layered mixture and keeps out oxygen from the atmosphere. The fresh water floats on a denser layer of salt water. Underneath this is a layer of poisonous hydrogen sulfide produced by bacteria living in the water. Underneath this layer is anoxic seawater, water that does not contain any oxygen.
Kenny Broad is an anthropologist at the University of Miami in Florida. He studies the effects of climate change and human understanding of its risks. He has spent several years exploring underwater caves in the Bahamas. Here, Mr. Broad discusses his many cave explorations during a talk at the National Geographic Society in Washington, D.C.
Underwater caves are probably, I'd argue, one of the least understood ecosystems on the planet. One of the reasons they're one of the least understood, they're one of the least explored. And they're one of the last places where you still physically have to go there. You can't send in a submarine or a remote-operated vehicle, some autonomous machine. You need to go there.
Kenny Broad helped organize the Bahamas Blue Hole Expedition. In 2009, a team of scientists spent 2 months researching blue holes on Bahamian islands, including Andros and Abaco. The trip received financial support from the National Geographic Society.
One reason blue holes have not been fully explored is that they can be extremely dangerous. There are many safety rules that divers must follow to help ensure their survival. First, divers must have training and experience to swim in these caves. Divers who explore a cave for the first time must establish a thin rope called a guideline. This line helps them to safely enter and exit the cave without getting lost. Divers must also bring several light sources in case one fails. They also must bring more than one set of breathing equipment in case one device fails. And they must pay careful attention to their air supply. The rule they follow is to use a third of their air to enter the cave, a third to exit, and a third for emergencies.
There are many difficulties involved in diving in blue holes. In some blue holes, divers must quickly swim through a layer of hydrogen sulfide to reach the horizontal caves further down. This gas causes itchy skin, dizziness, and in high enough quantities, death. Or divers might face extremely strong currents that can suck them into an opening. If they are not careful with their movements, they can disrupt an area of a cave, creating explosions of silt, which makes it impossible to see clearly. Kenny Broad shows a video of a diver forcing his body through a very narrow, rocky opening.
It's a mental game. It's not a physical game. This isn't macho. It's not thrill-seeking. It's more about keeping your breath rate under control.
For most explorers, though, the possibility of discovery in these cave environments makes the experience worth the risk.
You can jump into what looks like an insignificant little hole in the ground and come out with information that's of value to many different disciplines.
Scientists are interested in these caves because oxygen-free conditions there are similar to those on Earth long ago, before oxygen existed on our planet.
What was life like? And when I say the ancient oceans, maybe a more dramatic way to phrase this question is, how did life form? I'm talking about life 3.5 billion years ago.
He says the microbes that were present then did not leave a clear fossil record for scientists to study. So studying the organisms in these oxygen-free caves gives clues about the past.
So what happens here is we have a modern-day analogy for what the oceans were like in terms of both the chemistry and the biology.
Experts are not only interested in life on our planet. Astrobiologists can compare information about these organisms and their environment to other oxygen-free environments, like those in space. They study these extreme conditions to understand how and where life might exist on other planets. Larger organisms are equally interesting to scientists. Most are colorless and cannot see. For example, the Augustocharis cave shrimp is only about 2.5 centimeters long. It has no color except an area of its digestive system. Then there is the remipede. Some scientists describe it as a living fossil. It has changed very little over the past 300 million years.
Blue holes also permit scientists to study climate change over thousands of years. They want to understand what those changes could mean in the future. Some of the horizontal caves have calcite formations called stalagmites and stalactites. They formed little by little tens of thousands of years ago when sea levels dropped. Scientists can study these formations and map out the climate conditions present during every year of their growth.
Because blue holes contain no oxygen, they also protect ancient objects from the destruction of time. For example, divers in Sanctuary Blue Hole on the island of Andros in the Bahamas found the ancient bones of native Lucayan tribe members. Experts are not sure whether this tribe placed bodies in caves as part of burial ceremonies or for other reasons. Animal remains are also preserved in excellent condition. Divers in Sawmill Sink on Abaco Island found the 3,000-year-old remains of a Cuban crocodile. This kind of crocodile has long disappeared from the Bahamas. They also found some ancient turtle skeletons. They were so well preserved, they still had pieces of soft tissue.
The Bahamas may have more than 1,000 blue holes, but only about 200 have been discovered. This includes the world's deepest known blue hole, called Dean's Blue Hole, on Long Island. It measures 202 meters in depth. Kenny Broad and his team spent time talking with native Bahamians to ask them if they knew where the team could find other blue holes. He says younger generations are generally not aware of such caves, but their parents know about them and once used them.
What's interesting, though, when you talk to these folks' parents, they were keenly aware of these holes because they use them as their source of drinking water. They use them for all sorts of medicinal reasons for the plants that grew around them.
Many blue holes have become areas both throw away waste. But these actions are polluting an important source of fresh water. Part of Kenny Broad's goal is to raise awareness about these underground areas so local communities will take better care in protecting them. Another threat these cave systems face is rising sea levels. As sea levels rise, the careful balance of chemistry and nature in these caves could be destroyed.
Kenny Broad says these blue holes must be protected for several reasons. They are important for environmental and scientific discoveries. These caves also give a few explorers an extraordinary chance to see life in a beautiful and strange environment that is like no other on Earth.
This program was written and produced by Dana Demange. I'm Steve Ember.
And I'm Barbara Klein. You can see pictures of blue holes at voaspecialenglish.com. Join us again next week for Explorations in VOA Special English.